Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham. And on this episode, we are talking Tonys because Tony Award season is in full swing in New York with TV appearances by Tony-nominated performers and newspaper profiles popping up almost every single day and announcements of upcoming national tours of the nominated shows, all part of the scramble to get noticed by Tony Award voters. So with the awards just a couple of weeks away, which is, by the way, Sunday, June 8th, to be exact, I thought it would be fun to take a look at who might just be taking home some of those Tony Awards in a couple of weeks. So I invited Ron Fassler to join me. You might remember Ron from just a few weeks ago. He was here chatting about his wonderful book, The Show Goes On, Broadway Hirings, Firings, and Replacements. Welcome, Ron.
Well, hello, Donald. Nice to be back.
Yeah, Ron is an author, critic, and theater historian. And you definitely have a history about Tonys, which is why I wanted you to come on. Talk about that.
Well, I'm old enough to have been in the viewing audience for the very first nationally televised Tonys, which were in 1967. Tonys had been around for 20 years, but they were very much a local affair. They were finally on national television circuit on ABC. The program was on for 1 hour, if you can believe it. And they gave out about 15 awards, all of them on camera. The speeches lasted, I'm not joking. When Robert Preston won Best Actor, he said, thank you, and walked off the stage. I mean, it was really very different, but they did manage to get in the musical numbers because it was a big commercial for Broadway. Of course, that's grown and grown. It's now a 3-hour gargantuan broadcast from Radio City Music Hall. But I was so interested in the Tonys as a 10-year-old, I really wanted to read a book about them, and no book existed at that time. It's just a 20-year-old award. So I went to the library, and I started using microfilm and going back and reading old newspapers. And you're going to laugh, but as a 10-year-old, it took about 2 years, I wrote my own Tony Awards book. And I typed it. It had no commentary. It was just facts. And it was just purely a statistical. But I had it. I don't have it anymore. I wish I had it. But it was all typed up. And then I would add to it every year when the new nominees and winners. I mean, it was pretty hilarious. I had my own typewriter. That was before the days of both. I sound like I'm 150 years old. It was the days before electric typewriters.
Right.
And I was plunking away at it, and I couldn't have been more happy. And so my interest in the Tonys has been unwavering. I've attended the Tonys many, many times. The first time I was only 15 years old, and I was there the year of Follies and Jesus Christ Superstar. And that was also the year, if you've been on YouTube to look at that ceremony, that's the year they gave a special Tony to Ethel Merman, and she sang a musical tribute to herself. The story behind that was, Ethel, we've got a wonderful group of people, Hal Linden, Larry Blyden, they're all going to sing your songs. And she went, hey, wait a minute, nobody's singing my songs. And so she is in every number, which is the way it should be. Mm-hmm. And I was there in the very last row of the Broadway theater. I think I paid $10 for my ticket, which that was the most money I'd ever spent on a theater ticket. And yes, in the last few years, I've been going to the actual ceremony. And I loved them. I loved doping them. So thank you for having me as your guest. Let's have some fun with this year's nominees and potential winners.
Yeah, I thought we're going to focus, obviously, on the musical categories, because that's the focus of this particular radio show is generally the musical categories, although I know Ron's going to insert some comments about some of the plays as well, because you've seen everything this
season.
Yes,
every show that's nominated I saw, and yeah. It was a very good year for plays.
It was a great year for plays, a great year. It was a really good year for Broadway, period. There was a lot of quality stuff this year. I got the pleasure of actually meeting you in person earlier this month because I was in New York for a whirlwind 5 days, which I saw 6 different shows. And I was lucky enough for you to invite me to join you to see Real Women Have Curves as your guest. So we got to see.
I'm sorry that didn't get more nominations.
I am sorry too, because I actually had a wonderful time at the show, and so we are going to we're going to jump in and talk about the nominees, and you're going to give me personal picks, but also, you know, since you're on the ground in New York, talk about what you hear, what you think is probably going to win. I'll insert stuff too, because while I was in New York, I had multiple breakfasts, lunches, and dinners with lots of different theater people, including several Tony voters. So I got a lot of feedback in terms of what they were talking about. And it was, like I said, a great season. There were 14 new musicals this season and 7 musical revivals. So there were a lot of things to pick from. And I thought we would start with the 4 design awards, which may or may not give us a sense on Tony Awards night as to whether or not there could be a sweep developing for one particular show. Although I generally find that the Tony voters take, you know, the Tony voters that I know kind of take this process relatively seriously, and they don't necessarily pick one particular show all the time to give everything to you.
Sweeps are like the year that Bands Visit won everything was a real surprise to most people. I think for the most part, people have a ballot and they go, how do I spread the wealth? You know,
what I think really had the best scenic design or what really had the best sound design or whatever. They really look at these things and they don't necessarily say, I'm going to vote for the same show in every category. They just don't.
And they'll say, gee, I just filled out my ballot and I didn't give anything to, let's say, Death Becomes Her. Wow, I really want to represent that show. I think that happens. I also think what happens, honestly, is sometimes we'll go, well, so-and-so is a lock. They're going to win. They don't even need my vote. I'm going to vote for so-and-so.
Right.
And sometimes that shifts the balance.
It can shift the balance. So we're going to start with the design categories. And in the best scenic design for a musical, we have Swept Away, Maybe Happy Ending, Buena Vista Social Club, and then 2 design nominations for Derek McLean, Death Becomes Her and Just in Time. And this is, I think it's an interesting category because I think one particular show in general, I think, relies very heavily on its scenic design, and that is Maybe Happy Ending. It's so integral to the storytelling.
No question.
So,
and the old joke, you come out humming the scenery, is no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's so important to the way the show flows and the way the show tells the story of the two, you know, humanoid type robots and how they fall in love and how they live and the whole concept of it's being set in the future and how this whole works is really
this is really the robot musical from Korea, in case anybody doesn't know.
And it was kind of
a sleeper hit.
It
sort of shuffled into town with not a lot of advance word. And boy, it really took. I mean, people really love this show.
Yeah, and I remember correctly when it opened in the fall or when it was about to start previews in the fall, there was a bit of a delay in it starting previews because they were having trouble getting some of the pieces of the set shipped, or there were some elements to the set that were delayed. And I remember there were all these rumors abound saying, oh, that's not really true. They're lacking some of their funding, and that's an excuse they're using because they're trying to get extra money, and maybe it's never going to open, and it's never going to start previews.
Well, that's the vicious gossip. I mean,
yeah, that's always the gossip.
Operation Sidewinder didn't have its marquee finished, and it was had to do with the part.
Oh, you mean Mincemeat? Mincemeat, because they didn't have the ball.
What did I say? I said Operation Sidewinder. That's a Sam Shepard play from 1970. Oh, that shows my age. Operation Mincemeat.
Right, because they're missing light bulbs or something, and people were like, oh, they're missing light bulbs.
Oh, no, it's not missing light bulbs. They're having issues with financing. People love to gossip. But Maybe Happy Ending is nominated in every one of these categories here, the 4 design categories, rightly so. It's a brilliantly designed show. There are a few people I've talked to who felt it was over-designed, and they felt it sort of got in the way of things. Mm-hmm. I disagree. I think most people disagree about that. I frankly think in this category that it's Maybe Happy Endings to lose. I loved all the sets for every one of these shows. Swept Away was a brilliant shipwreck that happened in front of your eyes. That was in any other season might have taken this award. The Buena Vista Social Club started in a 200-seat theater off Broadway, and to move it to Broadway, they didn't do much, but they do something at the end, a little bit of just a great final thing that scenically was spectacular. Just in Time has one of the best sets Circle in the Square has ever instituted. They use the space brilliantly, and I would love a year where that would win. I just don't think anything can really beat Maybe Happy Ending for scenic design.
Right. Yeah, I know I told you after we saw Real Women Have Curves that I was shocked that they didn't get nominated in this category, because I thought the scenic design in that show was really effective for what they were doing. So I'm disappointed they weren't nominated, but I tend to agree with you. I think Maybe Happy Ending is probably going to get this one just because it's so important to the way the show works and the way the storytelling is done. It's so much a part of the show.
And the musicals were very well designed. I think the only one that really wouldn't get a nomination in this category is Sunset Boulevard, because there's really no set.
There's no set.
Yeah.
So then let's move on to costume design of a musical. And we have Buena Vista Social Club, Boop, the musical, Maybe Happy Ending, Death Becomes Her, and Just in Time. And what are you thinking here?
Well, I'm a member of the Drama Desk organization. We had our voting deadline. The deadline is in 2 days, but I voted yesterday. And I tell you, I voted for Just in Time. I thought the costumes were superb in that show. I have a feeling, though, that the Tony Awards will be voting for Boop. Boop. I think it's between Boop and Death Becomes Her. Mm-hmm. Greg Barnes's Boop costumes are kind of spectacular in that Boop lives in a black and white world, and then she moves to the real New York City, and it's a color world. And he's done some really smart, clever things. He's also been a multiple Tony Award winner in the past. But Death Becomes Her has some pretty spectacular costumes as well. And Paul Tazewell is kind of riding high. He won the Academy Award a few months ago for the movie of Wicked. He's a former Tony Award winner himself. He only just recently won. But I think Buena Vista Social Club is not in the running here. I don't really think Maybe Happy Ending is in the running. It's just sort of outdone by these other shows. I don't think it'll be Just in Time, although, like I said, it was my vote. And I think that makes it between Boop and Death Becomes Her.
They're the most Broadway type.
They are.
Musical type costumes. I mean, they're big in spectacular.
They're very big costumes. I enjoyed the subtlety of Just in Time. And there's so many quick changes in Just in Time. The chorus women, I don't know how they do it. They must have, what do you think, Donald? You saw it.
I didn't see Just in Time.
Oh, I thought you saw that. Yeah, no. I think maybe 20 costume changes.
Wow, really?
It's crazy. But I'm going to go with Death Becomes Her if you're marking a ballot for Ron's choices. I think that would be the winner.
But what do you, and you think that's going to probably won't be the winner?
I think that's going to do it. Yeah,
right.
I do.
I mean, they're doing a pretty big push on Boop also. You can see it. It's so funny because even though I'm here in LA, I do follow a lot of the theater sites and stuff online. And boy, oh boy, you can just see all the publicity stuff that's going on with all the different nominated shows to get their stuff out there. And, you know, and they're really, as you said, the color versus black and white stuff in Boop is, they're really pushing the number, the Where is Betty number, which really shows off the costumes that Greg Barnes designed. If you've not seen the number, you can see the number online. It's not a big surprise because they really have been advertising the number.
Yeah, you can Google it.
Which requires the costumes to be half black and white and half in color, so that when the chorus or in the cast, when they're on stage and sort of like this chorus line, they simply flip around and it becomes black and white in color instantly. So it's a very clever way of doing that whole number. And they've really been pushing that and showing off the costumes for like the opening numbers and it's a very spectacular, and Greg Barnes is such an amazingly talented costume designer, especially for these kind of big Broadway shows. But it'll be interesting.
Well, do we discuss the fact that for the most part, I think the name behind it isn't quite as important as the show itself.
Yeah.
You know, people vote for the show as opposed to, people aren't going to say, Greg Barnes already has 4 Tonys.
Right. And I don't know how.
I don't think they think that way.
And I don't know what a Tony ballot looks like, because I don't know if the Tony ballot has the actual nominee's name in these categories.
I believe it does.
It does. Okay. I know, for example, an Oscar ballot, it does not have the people's names. It just has the movie.
Correct.
It just has the movie name.
That explains the poor, I think he was a sound, he was in the sound area. He was nominated like 19 times. And you'd think, gosh, he's the Susan Lucci of the Oscars.
That's because they don't
vote
know the name.
Name.
Right, they vote don't. By the movie name, yeah.
It's not a snub.
Yeah, so you are thinking Death Becomes Her is probably going to get it.
Yeah, very close between Boop and Death Becomes, but I'm going to go with the Death Becomes Her, spreading the wealth a little.
I have a secret you would die for. I know a fix you won't believe. Here's your exclusive invitation, and once you're in, you'll never leave. Yes, I can sense you have immense potential. You just haven't found it yet. Don't be scared, don't abscond. Take my body as my bond. What you see is what you get.
If you want perfection, take a sip and drink it in. Kill your old complexion. Welcome to your brand new skin.
Don't shield your eyes from all this beauty. My clients love it when you stare. Come take a look at every perfect limb. You'd never know that flaws once festered there. We reject the laws that time is bound by. I select the ones whom I set free. They come to Viola Van Horn, where beauty is reborn.
We who want perfection.
And who doesn't?
Take a sip and drink.
That it hits your lips.
A little touch of magic in a world obsessed with science.
For those who'll pay the price, what would you sacrifice for?
Fame.
Take
freedom.
Take
sex.
Take
money.
Take
repentance.
Take
retention.
Take
acceptance.
Take
ascension.
For power or potential. For attention or revenge. If you want perfection, take a sip and drink it. Kill your old complexion. Welcome to your brand new.
You would die for.
And in the lighting design category, we have Sunset Boulevard, Buena Vista Social Club, Lloyd Collins, Maybe Happy Ending, and Death Becomes Her.
Well, I think that this is Sunset Boulevard's to lose. Lighting is everything. There's no set. And it's quite brilliant, the lighting of that show. Maybe Happy Ending, certainly, because the lighting is beautiful. And of course, the design of that show is so rich and warm and really spectacular. So I would say it's between those two, in all honesty. I don't think Boop or Death Becomes Her or Just in Time are really quite in the class of those two achievements. What do you think?
Well, I did not see Sunset, and I didn't see Floyd, and I didn't see Death Becomes Her. So I've only seen Maybe Happy Ending in Buena Vista. I thought the lighting design in Buena Vista Social Club was also pretty good. I mean, I thought
no question. These are all worthy nominees.
They're really good nominees. But I think, I think that it, I think Maybe Happy Ending is, the lighting is really, really important for the design of the show. So
it could easily be Maybe Happy Ending. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So but something about Sunset Boulevard, which I think is going to win a couple of awards on June 8th. I think that this might just be another feather in its cap.
So then let's move on to sound. We've got Buena Vista Social Club, Sunset Boulevard, Just in Time, Maybe Happy Ending, and Lloyd Collins.
This is another situation where we have one person being nominated twice, just like Derek McLean in Scenery.
Yes.
We've got Pierre Hyelinski being nominated twice. He's nominated for Just in Time and Maybe Happy Ending. I got to tell you, you're going to think this is odd, but I'm predicting four different winners, four different shows here. So I've already said that I think Maybe Happy Ending, Scenery, that costumes would be
Death Becomes Her.
Death Becomes Her, that lighting would be Sunset Boulevard. And I think sound is going to go to Just in Time. The balance of the band and Jonathan Groff and all the actors in Circle in the Square,
right,
which is a very hard theater. So those viewers who've never been to this theater, it's shaped like no other theater on Broadway.
Right.
And it's three quarters round. He's in the audience. He's out of the audience. The other actors are in the audience, out of the audience. It's one of the clearest sound designs I've ever sat through. I'm no expert. I think it's very difficult for every Tony voter to, unless you are in this side of the business, to vote for sound. I think we can see things, costumes, lighting, sets, but when it comes to sound orally, you know, the challenges involved are, it's off our pay grade. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, as an amateur, I was impressed more with Just in Time than any other show. I could be wrong.
I've heard that.
My feelings.
No, I agree with you because even though I didn't see the show, that's I've heard that comment from a lot of people I've talked to.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, because I've heard that. Actually, the two shows that I've heard that about the most are Buena Vista Social Club and Just in Time.
Only
because they are the two shows where you have a band. One, Just in Time, you were dealing with an in-the-round space that's
correct.
Really difficult to create good sound design. And with Buena Vista Social Club, you've got a band on stage, which is really, really hard sometimes. And it's so clear. You can hear everything in Buena Vista Social Club. It's so beautifully designed.
Such a good band. They're receiving a special Tony.
Right. They're getting a special Tony Award just for the band.
Yeah.
It's really beautifully designed sound-wise. So those are the two that I've heard the most about, but I think you're right. I think Just in Time is going to get the sound design because Circle in the Square is notoriously difficult to do anything.
Absolutely.
That's also why they may also walk up. I think they're also, even though I think maybe Happy Ending is going to snag scenic design, Just in Time could get it also, just because I've heard so many people say they have never seen Circle in the Square utilized scenically
Never.
As well as they have done it for Just in Time.
I've been going to Circle in the Square since the theater opened with Morning
right.
Becomes Electra in mm-hmm. 1972. I mean, I've never seen the theater used so well. The other thing about sound, I'll tell you, is that last night I saw Pirates of Penzance, and I turned to my companion intermission. I said, is it me or is the sound off? And she goes, it's off. Maybe it was an off night, but the balances were not correct. Certain actors couldn't be heard. The band was too loud at certain places. So maybe they'll fix it.
Yeah, one of the shows I was at on this last trip, it was pretty tough too. And I can't remember which show it was, but one of the shows I was at, the sound was a little tricky.
And we take it for granted now because everything's mic'd. So when it's off, you can hear it.
Yeah,
because you're used to that excellent balance. I mean, you've seen the boards in the back of the theater when you walk in. I mean, they're magicians. These guys that have to operate the sound. You know.
We think Just in Time is probably going to take this one.
Let's see. And that's four different shows. I'm predicting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could be wrong. I mean, it could be a sweep with maybe Happy Ending. On the way to what you were discussing.
Right.
Wow. Maybe Happy Ending is going to win a whole lot of Tonys.
So, best orchestrations, we've got Just in Time, maybe Happy Ending, Lloyd Collins, Buena Vista Social Club, and Sunset Boulevard. From my conversations with some Tony voters and publicists and stuff when I was in New York on my trip, it kind of came down to two shows. I know I have my own personal favorite, but...
Can I guess what the two might
sure,
be?
Sure, sure.
It's Just in Time and Buena Vista Social Club because of the bands on stage.
Actually not.
Okay.
No, actually the two that I heard the most about were Just in Time and maybe Happy Ending.
Okay.
And the benefit that maybe Happy Ending gets is that they have a cast recording out and you have the ability to actually listen to... Because when you see the show in person... You're not as aware of the orchestrations until you go back and listen to the cast recording. And then when you listen to the cast recording, you see how beautifully done the orchestrations actually are for the show, which don't necessarily come across as well as they do when you're seeing it in the theater.
And that's a really excellent point.
And the other shows don't have that benefit because we don't have a cast recording for Just in Time yet, or Lloyd Collins, or Buena Vista Social Club. Sunset Boulevard, I don't think is in this.
No, or the unnominated Dead Outlaw, which has some spectacular orchestration.
Exactly. So that's why maybe Happy Ending is definitely in the running here, because you can really hear. And trust me, if you go back and listen to the cast recording, that's one of the first things that jumped out at me when I listened to the cast recording of maybe Happy Ending, is how really beautifully done the orchestrations are, because they're so unique to the show. But also a lot of people really love the orchestrations for Just in Time.
I was going to say Just in Time is just the best I've heard. I mean, it was music to my ears, literally, to hear that big band sound done so well. It's very impressive. But what you just said about the CD, I could shift my vote.
Because when people are revisiting these shows, especially because people are going to be listening to maybe Happy Ending because of its nomination for Best Score.
And every voter received one of these
CDs.
Everybody
got the CD. And it's been out for several weeks now. So, yes. you got to remember getting things like that into the hands of voters is really important. And that's, that gives them a slight edge in some things because you can get that stuff into the ears of voters.
You've convinced me. I'm going to put my vote on maybe Happy Ending.
And that's the only reason I think, to be honest with you, when it came out and I was dealing with the publicist for the show, my first request, because they offered up some stuff and it's still kind of in the works. I even said to them, I said, I would love to get Will Aronson on to talk about the orchestrations. I was really impressed with what he did with the orchestrations because they're really interesting. So I think it might go to them, but we'll see. I could be wrong, but we'll see.
And Buena Vista Social Club should not be counted out.
No, absolutely not.
Even though the band's getting a special award, I mean, the whole show is music. I mean, it's all about, there's nothing, I mean, the book is almost like what, remember when David Merrick called the 42nd Street book lead-ins and crossovers?
Yes.
It's almost the same.
It is.
It's been pared down to practically nothing.
Yes. But to me, not only is Buena Vista Social Club all about the music, but it's also a lot about dance.
Hello.
We are now talking about best choreography.
Segway.
So in the choreography category, we have Smash, Gypsy, Death Becomes Her, Boop, the musical, and Buena Vista Social Club. And
I feel confident in saying this is between two shows. I'm sure we agree on the same two.
I would say it's probably between Boop and Buena Vista.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
I don't think Smash and Gypsy and Death are even in the running here. I really don't think so either.
I think the choreography in Smash is fine. I did not see Gypsy. I didn't see Death Becomes Her.
Gypsy shouldn't have even been nominated. This should be Just in Time to get a nomination in here. I don't know how that didn't get nominated.
I think Jerry Mitchell's doing terrific work in Boop because as one of the people I had, I think it was breakfast with, basically said he's the saving grace. One of the saving graces of Boop is that Jerry Mitchell is a master at deflection because he is so good at staging musical numbers that he can cover up the deficiencies of any musical. by distracting you and saying, look at this shiny object, this beautiful musical number, which kind of covers up the deficiencies of the show.
he's been challenged, though. You know, between Kinky Boots and this, which is easily, what, 10, 11 years, he hasn't had the successes that he'd been having prior. And that always, you know, musicals fail for a number of reasons. It's rare you can blame the choreographer. He always does great work.
Yeah.
This is his first, you know, real sort of return to form in terms of having a show that a lot of people really like. Boop. I mean, Boop is very popular, although it's struggling at the box office a bit and is really needs some Tonys to make to make things work for them.
But,
and a big number on national television.
But
that's going to help.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, when I saw Buena Vista Social Club, I was really impressed by the choreography. I was really impressed by the integration of dance into the show. I think people going in thinking that this is basically, because as you said, the book of the show is really hardly there.
It's like, bare minimum.
It's bare minimum. There is a plot and there are characters, but it's bare minimum, which we will
all
talk about.
The music
we will
and the dancing.
We'll talk about later. But a lot of, because it does, I think, affect how I feel about another category. And a lot of people think, oh, well, it's basically just a concert. But I don't think so. I think it's just as much a dance show as anything, because there's so much choreography in the show. And the way it's integrated into the story, the way it's integrated into the musical numbers, I thought it was beautifully done. I really thought the choreography was truly just as much a star of the show as anything.
Yeah, it has my vote. I think that
I thought the music was great. I thought the singing was great, but I thought the choreography and the dance was gorgeous in the show. Really well done.
And Justin Peck won last year for Illinois.
He's teamed up with Patricia Delgado for this. So they're both
who's his wife.
Yeah. And but, I think it's gorgeous to watch. I mean, it's just beautifully done.
Yeah, I think it's going to win. I mean, yes, easily Jerry Mitchell, who's quite beloved in the theater community, could easily win. And we'll just see. But I think we're right that it's come down between those two shows.
Okay, fellas, key of G. Wait, you're saying, who is she? You're playing, got me stopping and swaying. Yo can go, but I'm staying. It's where I wanna be. Let me hear some Louis Armstrong licks, bassy boogie in the mix. That cat got away for kicks and leave some room for me. I said, leave some room for me. Play the B flat, E flat, and make my heart go bam, 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 bam.
before we move on to direction, shall we talk a little bit about some of the plays?
Oh, I'd love to.
I don't have a list in front of me, but it has been...
I have the list in front of me.
You do? Good. Okay. Because one of the things I was most impressed with, especially when it came to the nominations for Best Play, was that the nominating committee did not take the bait. In other words, they didn't go for the big... They basically nominated in the revival categories and in the Best Play category. They went for what they really felt were the best pieces of work. I mean, they didn't go for Good Night and Good Luck. They didn't go for the big star vehicles. They went for what they thought were genuinely the best plays.
And the five nominees for Best Play are the five best plays.
And they're good. I mean, are five good plays. Really good plays.
There's nothing like we got to fill out the category here.
Right.
Which happens in past years.
Yeah.
You have English, which was a complete and total transfer from off-Broadway, albeit 3 years later, of the original production, original cast that performed at the Atlantic Theater. And it fit beautifully at the Hames, and it was a wonderful evening of theater, terrific play. Hills of California, which I happen to have seen in England a year ago, then again in the fall when it came here, may not be Jez Butterworth's best play. I think that's Ferryman, which won the Tony.
And it had some rewrites, didn't it? It had like a
substantial... It had some major rewrites. Yes, the ending was completely different. And they did something with the set that was very dramatic. People remember this moment. And I love telling them, well, it wasn't in the original production. They thought about that even after the first successful British production. They decided, well, we're coming to New York. Let's do something. We've got another idea to try. Mm-hmm. John Proctor and the Villain was the surprise of the season to me. When I heard it was coming to Broadway, I thought, why is an off-Broadway play coming to Broadway with essentially a playwright nobody's heard of, a star in Sadie Sink who really, but is she really going to be the box office draw? What is the lure here? And then I saw the play, and this author, Kimberly Bellflower, has an original voice. The play is really well staged. Danya, wow. Then you have Purpose, which just won the Pulitzer Prize and is a wonderful play. Although there are some who don't think it's as good as Appropriate, which last season won the Revival Award for the same playwright. But Purpose is a really terrific evening in the theater. And then you got Oh Mary, which is Cola Scala's sort of brilliant, and it's a phenomenon. I mean, it's a play that has had nothing but sellout success since the day it opened on Broadway. And there are some who think it's just an exaggerated sketch, and how could it win Best Play against a Pulitzer Prize winner or a British play like Hills of California?
Or two Pulitzer winners, because English won the Pulitzer also.
Exactly right. Exactly right. That's very rare for two Pulitzer Prize winners to be up against one another. And you want to know something? I'm predicting Oh Mary's going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a cultural phenomenon.
People say comedies don't often win, and people say, how can it? It's so insubstantial. But I think they're wrong because, as you well know, and we both know, writing comedy is hard. Writing farce is really hard.
A farce had never won Best Play.
And writing something like this and making it work and making it and making it successful is so hard and so difficult to pull off. It is an achievement. It's great. It's really well done. And it's also shown the fact that when the original cast or some of the original cast left, the show still worked without Cole in the lead role, without Conrad. It worked. And the show still was bringing audiences in. It was still funny, but in different ways with different actors. And it's a show that will have a longer life, even without the lead people. So it's shown that it's not just a vanity project for this one person. So other actors can do the show and it will have a long life. So it is a show that is going to be in the canon of American farces, which we don't have a lot of those.
We do not.
And so I I wouldn't be surprised if it wins. I really wouldn't.
I think it's going to sweep, to be honest with you. I think it's going to, I think it's going to win director.
Well, director, I think it will. I hope there's a category. I hope it doesn't win, but there's one particular acting category. I just kind of hoping it doesn't win, but it's okay.
Well, if it's best actor, I hate to break it to you.
I think Cole's going to win.
I think Cole is going to win it. So I see which category you're talking about. Featured actor,
I really am hoping for Frances Chiu.
I'm hoping for Frances Chiu as well. I think Conrad has the potential of getting swept up in that sweep.
I do too.
But I finally watched
Yellowface, PBS. Yes.
Did it translate well?
It really did. You should watch it. It's really well directed for television.
Excellent.
It's the kind of play that can work for television because a lot of the scenes are just two people.
And direct address to the audience.
So it works really, really well on TV. And Francis in that is so good. He is so good in this.
Yeah. It's one of those performances by an actor who's been around forever, who's giving the role of his career.
He's never been nominated before. And he's so well loved. And it's such a great performance. He's so good in this role. And let's not forget also that very few Asian American actors have ever won a Tony.
In fact, would he? No, he wouldn't be the first.
He would be the first.
But David, obviously BD Wong won for Butterfly.
Yeah.
There's been a few, but you can't even count them on one hand.
Right.
So I'm really hoping
Francis wins because he's just
so good
in this role.
And
I think they were smart. And even though the show's been closed, they were really smart to get this recorded for great performances on PBS because it just aired last week. And I'm guaranteeing you a lot of Tony voters were watching.
There's no question. That's going to help him. It's going to help him. And I think it's going to win Revival as well.
I think so too. Because I think of the plays in the Revival category, it's the best one. And it's a great production of the play. It's a very good production of the play.
Revival of a play is the weakest category of the entire Tony nominations.
Yeah.
This was not a good season for Revivals. Lackluster would be the word I'd use for almost all of them, with the exception of Eureka Day and Yellowface, which I think are the front runners for the award.
Yeah, I think it'll be Yellowface though. I really do.
It's a really good play.
And this was a good production of it.
So just briefly to stay on plays, we're kind of agreeing that Cole looks very strong. And for best actress in a play, I think that's a fait accompli. I think Sarah Snook has had the award in her pocket the day they announced it was coming to Broadway, to be honest with you.
I just don't see anybody else.
I don't see anybody else beating that achievement. And featured actress in a play, which is a really strong category. Holy moly. Mm-hmm. You've got Carrie Young for her fourth consecutive nomination in this category, which is a very rare feat. And she won it last year. And she's marvelous in Purpose. Fina Straza is all of 19 years old and is killing it in John Proctor as the villain. You got two wonderful actors from English, Tala Ash and Marjan Nishat. They're both wonderful. Tala may be with an edge because the part is such a part you can win a Tony Award for. But then you got Jessica Hecht for Eureka Day. Jessica Hecht, who is one of the most beloved actors in the New York theater. She is never not working. She must be a joy to have as part of a company because she is cast over and over and over
again. And she's never won.
She's only been nominated, I believe, once.
I think she's going to win, actually.
I think she's going to win, too. She was great in the part, just great, and might just be her year.
Yeah.
So happy to go back to musicals now, if you choose.
Okay. Well, we are at Direction of a Musical, and we have got Saheem Ali for Buena Vista Social Club, Michael Arden for Maybe Happy Ending, David Cromer for Dead Outlaw, Christopher Gattelli for Death Becomes Her, and Jamie Lloyd for Sunset Boulevard.
Well, I'm sure you felt the same way after coming out of Maybe Happy Ending. You must have felt there's no way Michael Arden can lose this. Am I wrong? Did you feel that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I thought, looking at the list, I didn't see Death Becomes Her or Sunset. I know Sunset was pretty divisive. I mean, I will tell you that the three voters that I had meals with, none of them liked Sunset Boulevard. So they were on the definitely on the divisive side of Sunset Boulevard.
Well, are you still feeling it's a strong contender at the revival of a musical category? Or do you think your three friends are
none of them would vote for it? None of them really liked it.
Because I think it's going to win that category. We'll get to that category, but I think it's going to win there.
Right.
But I'll tell you why when we get there.
Yeah.
In terms of this category, direction of a musical, again, I think Michael Arden's work is superb.
I think,
this is someone who has never failed.
Yeah.
In anything he's attempted on Broadway. He did The Spring Awakening with the deaf actors that was stunning.
Mm-hmm.
His work on Once on This Island was beautiful. He won the Tony for Parade, and now he's got this. I mean, he's on quite the roll. And mm-hmm. I just think there's a lot of love from Maybe Happy Ending and that he will win this award. I think his competition is Jamie Lloyd, in spite of what the three voters you said, because it's all about the direction. I mean, that show, so it's either you love it or you don't love it. And let's face it, it's a hit. People do love it. If people didn't love it, it would have closed in 2 months. I mean, it's a hit. And I think those are the two strongest contenders. Cromer, of course, had not only Dead Outlaw, but say Good Night and Good Luck, which, I mean, that was quite the doubleheader. He directed both those plays. They opened within week of one another, which is insane. But of course, Dell was a transfer from off Broadway from last season. So he didn't have to really redirect it. It had already been directed. But Cromer is the best director really working currently in the American theater. He's certainly the one who is the go-to guy. I think he gets more offers to direct new plays and musicals than he can do both. And he's overdue for another Tony. He's only won one for Band's Visit. But I have a feeling this is just Maybe Happy Endings year kind of across the board. So I'm going with Michael Arden here.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think people generally feel that he's sort of like the heart behind the show. And he's kind of what makes the show work. It should be mentioned
that both he and Cromer are former actors turned directors.
Yeah.
David Cromer still acts. He's quite a good actor. He'll act when somebody offers him something and he's got the time for it.
So let's move on to book of a musical and score. For book, we've got Buena Vista Social Club, which I think is interesting. Dead Outlaw. Death Becomes Her, Maybe Happy Ending, and Operation Mincemeat. Thoughts?
Well, here's something interesting. We could be looking at that rare year where the best musical, best book of a musical, and the best score of a musical are split between three different shows.
Yeah.
It could easily happen with a number of scenarios. So I'm looking out for that. It's going to be a very interesting thing. I think we can both agree Buena Vista Social Club is not in the running here. No one admires the book. It's kind of surprising it got in there. But because it does work as a show, I think that's one of the reasons it got nominated here. Dead Outlaw's book is superb. I think the book of Operation Mincemeat is funny as hell. I don't think it's really in the running here. I just think there are stronger choices. Death Becomes Her, I'm going to just go on record as saying I don't get that show. I've never gotten through the movie. I've tried twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I love outrageous humor. There's just something off about Death Becomes Her that doesn't charm me. And the musical just didn't have it. I laughed. I didn't have a bad time. But if you asked me right now to tell you what happened in Death Becomes Her, I only saw it last November. I can't tell you what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I know I'm offending the people involved, but it just didn't have any resonance. It didn't have any. I couldn't take anything home with me because it's light and just it disappears into the ether. It doesn't have any something that you can really carry home with you.
Right.
So in terms of a book, I've got it down between Maybe Happy Ending and Dead Outlaw. And I think that Maybe Happy Ending, because it's such an original idea, even though Dead Outlaw is pretty damn original too.
Yes.
I think Maybe Happy Ending is going to win, which means I don't think we're going to have the wealth spread between three shows. But Dead Outlaw could easily win this category. And who knows? Maybe Death Becomes Her, if it has its fans, maybe people, you know, the year Tootsie won Best Book, nobody thought that was a great book, but they did think it was funny.
Yes.
And that's why it won, because it made people laugh. And Depp becomes or does make people laugh. I mean, no question. So what are your thoughts on this category?
I agree with you. I think we're either going to see a sweep of some sort, in which case we will get maybe Happy Ending doing musical, book, and score, or we may get a split, in which case we may get something for musical and then a different show for score and a different show for book, or somehow these things could be split up in multiple ways.
Would you be surprised if Operation Mincemeat won the best book?
No. I think it's very clever. It's very funny. I think the structure of the show works. It's very entertaining. I would not be surprised if the voters want to spread things around a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised to see Operation Mincemeat pick up book.
However, of all these musicals, it's the one where I know people who love it and people who don't like it at all. It's very much split. And I don't understand it, because I remember when it was over, I turned to my companion and said, "Can you imagine sitting through this and not enjoying it?" Mm-hmm. And yet I know people who've said to me, "Nope, didn't do a thing for me. Didn't think it was funny, clever." Mm-hmm. But if you like Monty Python, I don't see how you don't enjoy this show.
Right. But it's sort of like it's funny and clever and silly. So I look back at, you know, the season when Spamalot won, and the book went to Spelling Bee, and score went to Piazza, and it's sort of like this sort of can fit the mold of Spelling Bee in the sense that it's the funny, clever, silly thing, which Mincemeat is kind of in line with that. So I don't know. But then there's a lot of people I talk to who are sort of like, as much as they loved maybe Happy Ending, they don't necessarily, they love the show, but they're not as necessarily in love necessarily with the score or book as strongly necessarily. It's interesting when you try and pin them down. They're sort of like, I love the show. But then when you start to really drill down on the specific categories, they're not as firm on those categories.
Well, and so this is also sort of where sometimes, when it's the same person who wrote the book and who wrote the score, you think, well, it should go both hand in hand. I was surprised the year when Strange Loop won the book and the score went to Six. I was surprised.
Well, I wasn't surprised by that. That wouldn't surprise me at all. No.
Mm-mm. Okay. Well, because, I mean, after all, Six is only score. There is no book.
Right.
I mean, it was just songs. It was nine songs eight songs. That's the whole show. Mm-hmm. But I thought Strange Loop was just sort of in that it was going to win musical. And I just thought it's going to just walk away with all three, and it didn't. So there's definitely the kind of previous wins that would. And when you mentioned Spelling Bee, that's a book that's so strong, it could almost survive without the songs. And I think Operation Mincemeat could almost survive without songs. It's just a funny play. So it just makes a nature for how strong the book is.
So let's talk about score then, because we have Dead Outlaw, Death Becomes Her, Maybe Happy Ending, Operation Mincemeat, and Real Women Have Curves.
Right. So the only missing show here from the previous category is Buena Vista, because it wasn't eligible.
Right. It's not original score.
The theater.
Right.
Correct. So I was happy to see Real Women in this category, because it was a very, very impressive score. Mm-hmm. Fun. Mm-hmm. Smart. Very few clinkers, you know. I think Mincemeat's score is fun. It's certainly got one number that might win somebody a Tony Award. We'll get to that. Maybe Happy Ending score is charming. The Dead Outlaw score is raucous as hell and fun, and Yazbek is really kind of a master musical theater composer. And the Death Becomes Her score, well, I've already offered my opinion on Death Becomes Her. So what do you think it's going to, do you think it's between Dead Outlaw and Maybe Happy Ending?
I don't know. I mean, when I talk to people, the score is where Maybe Happy Ending seems to be the weakest when you talk to people.
I agree.
It's fine, it's good, but it's not necessarily one that you come out humming specific songs necessarily.
Come out humming the Dead Outlaw theme song.
You
come out humming that.
Right. There's a lot of really great songs in Dead Outlaw that kind of stick with you. But as we mentioned earlier, so far, we don't have a complete cast recording for Dead Outlaw. We have, they were wise to get at least 7 songs out from the cast recording. So there are, including some of the bigger numbers. So they do have that to help them, as opposed to maybe Happy Ending, which you don't. Mincemeat is out. Death Becomes Her is out. Real Women have Curves. They've got like 4 tracks out. So there are some things out. I don't know. Again, it depends on if we get some sort of sweep with maybe Happy Ending. If they get a sweep, although, they could pick up Score and Book. I just don't know.
You're also looking at a year like Millie, where Year in Town won Book and Score, and Millie won Musical. You could have a year where Dead Outlaw wins Book and Score, and maybe Happy Ending wins Musical.
Yep.
That just might happen.
It could happen that way. It could.
Yeah.
It's very possible.
So I don't know. If I was doing this for money in Las Vegas, you know, I think that the Score is going to be Dead Outlaw.
Okay.
It's what I would vote for.
Born with nothing, your cheeks are apple dumplings, the air, the water, there's something more you want, the milk, the sugar, outside you there's a name and you came with nothing, you'll leave it just the same, but between the dark and the darkies, the voice you're always hearing, some crazy auctioneer is yelling at you, and you walk, you run, you flee the dark and see the sun, and every brick you ever laid will crumble away, your mom is dead, your daddy's dead. Your brother's dead, and so are you. Abe Lincoln's dead, Frank James dead. Your mama's dead, and so are you, and so are you. Woo! Your adolescence was just an open present. You drank the liquor. Those dead ancestors, you had to make an exit. You went and found a bottle, and now your face reflects it. Yeah, so you fell with failures, and you confront your rivals, who stand there armed with Bibles pointing at you. And you plot, you scheme, you had a chance, had a dream, couldn't get a witness, now you stand here today. Your mom is dead, John Gotti's dead, Dillinger's dead, and so are you. Balzac is dead, Tupac is dead, and Frank is dead. S-O-R-U, S-O-R-U. I've been a pilgrim on the road from coast to coast. I look around and all I see was hungry ghosts. Getting and spending on the gravel road through hell. I know the drill, cause I'm one of them as well. Your wild desire, and all you must acquire, more love, more money, but don't you find it funny? And still you're hungry, in fact you're really famished, the craving and the panic, until the day you vanished. You just keep pushing pushers, you just keep cheating cheaters, like those religious leaders tell you to do. So you kick, you scream, you hear the graduation theme, Jehovah calls your name and then she takes you away. Babe Ruth is dead, George Custer's dead, Black Elk is dead, and so are you. Joe Young is dead, Bert Cotter's dead, Glenn Gould is dead, and so are you. Your mama's dead, your daddy's dead, they're all just dead, and so are you. Look at them dead, look at me dead, look at you dead, and so are you, and so are you.
I think it's probably stronger. It's just and the show definitely needs some Tony support because it's struggling a bit. It's a hard show to sell.
It is.
So let's move on to Revival of a Musical. I know you said you think it's going to be Sunset. The nominees, by the way, are Floyd Collins, Gypsy, Pirates, the Penzance Musical, and Sunset Boulevard.
Pirates only received one nomination, and this was it.
Yeah.
So if it won, that would be kind of shocking.
because it didn't really have a lot of love.
Right. Fort Collins was, I thought, the before it opened, I thought it could sneak in and grab this award because it's a show that was is going to get rediscovered because the original production only ran 3 weeks. I don't know if listeners know that, but it ran off Broadway for 3 weeks. Then it had an album that people just sort of fell in love with. Right. There have been many regional theater productions of it. I saw it regionally where it worked beautifully. I think this revival was very problematic. I think the reviews reflected it. It had moments that were wonderful, but it also had a lot of moments that weren't. It felt like it was in the wrong theater. It's a show about claustrophobia, and not only did they do it on the stage of the Beaumont, they opened up the stage and made it as big as it could possibly be, which I don't think was a smart notion. It's a tough sell. It just is. It's a very it's a downer. But that would leave Gypsy and Sunset Boulevard, which are also going to be battling it out for Best Actress in a Musical. And it depends on just how strongly you feel about these shows. Gypsy had some real detractors. It did not get nominated for Best Director. Sunset Boulevard has its detractors. But if you ask me, this category used to be called, when they first invented it, Most Innovative Production. They didn't even use the word revival. It was Most Innovative Reproduction. That's what they called it. And if you think about these four nominees, Floyd Collins, Gypsy and Pirates and Sunset, well, the most innovative one is Sunset. I think Sunset's going to take it.
Lay.
Okay. I mean, I haven't seen any of the productions, so I can't even comment.
I mean, I enjoy Gypsy a lot. I saw it twice. I recommend it to people. Mm-hmm. But it's not, it's flawed. It's got some real, that's why there's a reason George Wolfe was not nominated. Mm-hmm. There's things that are off about it. Nothing is off about Danny Burstein and Audra McDonald, and they're the core of the play. And it's hard to make Gypsy into anything less than great because it is one of the greatest book musicals that was ever written. Mm-hmm. That second act of Gypsy is a masterwork of just going from scene to scene and song to song till it builds to that extraordinary finale and then the denouement between mother and daughter. It's a perfect, in many ways, a perfect musical. It's got the best score on Broadway. You cannot top the score. Mm-hmm. Julie Stein, Stephen Sondheim, every other current Broadway musical, just you have to bow down to Gypsy. That's just fact. But Sunset Boulevard took a mediocre musical. Sorry, I know it won Best Musical, but it's not a great musical. It's a musical with two good songs in it. They turned it into something very dramatic and surprising. You just didn't know what was coming next. So I think that's going to win the Revival Award. Let's see.
So let's move on to the featured performances in the musical. We've got featured actress in the musical. We've got Natalie Venetia Belcon for Buena Vista Social Club, Julia Niddle for Dead Outlaw, Gracie Lawrence in Just in Time, Justina Machado for Real Women Have Curves, and Joy Woods for Gypsy.
Very good nominees all around, no question. Mm-hmm. Tight race. I don't think there's a front runner here.
Oh, you don't think there's a front runner? Okay.
No. I mean, I think the closest one to a front runner is Natalie Venetia Belcon, because it's almost a lead. That always helps you. You know, she's been around a while. I was shocked to open the bio and read that she was the original Gary Coleman.
Oh, you didn't remember that?
21 years ago. No, nope, did not remember that. And she's giving a really, really strong performance. I think she is going to win. I thought Julia Niddle's work in Dead Outlaw was superb. I mean, she plays about three different characters, and they're completely different women, and she's really kind of captivating in it. Gracie Lawrence is wonderful in Just in Time. I don't think it's a big enough part. It kind of fades out of the action after act one. Justina Machado has, again, one of the leads, really, and she's quite good in Real Women, but I just don't think there's a huge overflow of support for that show. Joy Woods and Gypsy, that was one of the problems I had with the show. I thought, wonderful actress, wonderful singer, but just misdirected by George Wolfe. I didn't find the Louise track in that show was off as far as I was concerned.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say it's Natalie.
Yeah, I think Natalie's probably the front runner because, as you said, she's sort of like one of the main focuses of her character is kind of the main focus in some ways of the show, whatever plot there is.
We should also tell your audience that her younger self is sort of her co-star.
Yeah.
It goes back and forth between her current self at age 60 or so and then her younger self. And she's also wonderful. She could have been nominated.
I thought she was very good too. Yeah.
Just terrific in it. But yeah, I said there was no front runner, but now that I'm looking at it, yeah.
But I think the tricky part here, as you said, is I think they're all, I mean, I did not see Just in Time or Gypsy.
Right.
But I think the only issue personally I think I have with Natalie is I think she's doing the best she can, but she doesn't have a lot to work with because, I mean, the book kind of lets her down. She kind of, the performance is based mostly on her presence in the show. Because she's got this kind of commanding presence on stage that's a lot of attitude and stuff. And ultimately, the book doesn't give her a lot to work with from a character perspective.
But the songs do.
The songs do.
When she sings, it's very dramatic.
It is. But at the same time, she's splitting those duties with her younger self. And the younger self gets, I think, almost more to do than she does. So
it's possible.
Yeah. I mean, because I was surprised that, because she was off stage quite a bit. So I was surprised ultimately that the younger self, I think, has maybe even a little bit more than she has to do. So I thought she was fine, but from an acting standpoint, I was sort of like, I don't know that I necessarily, if I were voting, I don't know that I would necessarily vote for her. Because I thought Julia Niddle was doing really terrific work in Dead Outlaw, because she's the only woman in the cast, so she's playing.
I could totally see her winning.
She's playing
totally
a lot of roles,
yeah,
and including some male roles because there's some crossover. But the two, but the specific female roles she plays are very distinctive roles, and she has a couple of numbers on her own, play in a couple of different characters that she plays that are really terrific, and they're very distinctive.
I also want to tell you something interesting.
She's a very unique performer, also, which I really like.
I saw it off Broadway with this exact same cast, and she didn't stand out off Broadway. And Broadway, I was like, who is this woman? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I was just taken with the show and sort of was like looking elsewhere. But now that I'd seen it already and was seeing it for a second time, she suddenly popped in a way that did not surprise me that she was nominated for a Tony.
Right. And then Justina in Real Women, I think, I'm thrilled she got nominated because ultimately she's sort of the comedic, dramatic spine of the show because she's the mother of the two daughters who are kind of the lead protagonists of the musical. And she has a lot of the funny stuff and she also has a lot of the dramatic stuff. And she's the main protagonist in the sense that she's the one that both daughters are trying to please and trying to, you know, rules over their lives. And so she's such an important person in the show. Mm-hmm. But as you said, she's almost a lead. So it's to me, it's a tough call. I mean, if they really wanted to recognize Real Women, this would be where to do it. The fact that she got nominated, I think, is a potentially good sign because I was surprised she got nominated because the way that
I agree.
Because she's very good in the, she's terrific in the role. So I don't know where it's going to go. I think Natalie probably will win because Buena Vista Social Club is doing so well and it's such a big show. And she's the face on the poster and she's definitely the main character that they focus on. So it probably will be Natalie, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Julia or Justina slip through because they're both really, really important characters in their shows.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a category to look at for a surprise.
Without shoes, without a smile, it's hard to reconcile with the man who was to me. He came into my life with his broken disposition. I had my suspicion, he remained a mystery. A stranger, a stranger, hoping for a future in our dusty little town. A stranger, a stranger. How was I to know he could never settle down? It hasn't been that long since I've been without him. There's not much about him I can recollect or tell. A picnic in the rain, a walk we may have taken, but I could be mistaken, I don't remember well. A stranger, a stranger, never gave a reason why he came here on his own. A stranger. Could be living life together, talking about whether we should prune the cherry tree. At the kitchen table, could you pass the gravy? Should we have a baby? It was never gonna be. A stranger, a stranger, held me in his arms.
not so very long ago, a stranger, a stranger. The man I was to marry was a man I didn't know.
Then, best performance by an actor in a featured role in a musical, we have Brooks Osmanskas for Smash, Jeb Brown for Dead Outlaw, Danny Burstein for Gypsy, Jack Malone for Operation Mincemeat, and Taylor Trench for Floyd Collins. I think this one is probably got a distinct frontrunner.
It does, and when you think about it, it's quite extraordinary because it's Jack Malone for Operation Mincemeat, and he has one number. Now, he obviously, in the entire roles. Show, he plays multiple roles. But it's all, everybody in that ensemble is on his level. Mm-hmm. They are. What separates him, what pushes him over the top, what made him the only nominee in the acting categories is that he has this one solo.
6 minutes.
That stops the show.
It's a 6 minute song.
Stop the show. It's out of the blue. You don't see it coming. It's a dramatic song in this crazy night of Monty Python-esque comedy. And he nails it. But here's what I'm going to say, and it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I saw the show in London a year ago. Mm-hmm. I saw it the week after Jack left the cast, and I saw his replacement. Now, I've just written a book about replacements and the art of replacing. Mm-hmm. I don't even have his name in front of me, but the actor who played it did it every bit as well as Jack Malone did. Mm-hmm. I think this is an instance where you win a Tony for how good the part you played was. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe it has such an effect on people. I mean, nobody can not come out of that show and talk about that number. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it. I couldn't, really, in all honesty, because it will take your breath away. And he does it brilliantly, and he's going to win a Tony for it. but again, it's like in a season where would anybody who took on what Sarah Snook took on win that Tony for that achievement? To play 26 characters in 2 hours without taking a glass of water. I mean, it's astonishing. But, you know, I write in my book about when I was a kid and I went to see a replacement for somebody who'd won a Tony. It was Cliff Gorman in the play Lenny, where he played Lenny Bruce. It was just one of those performances. You can't imagine anybody else playing it. And when he was replaced by an actor named Sandy Baron, who maybe nobody's heard of, but I thought, I want to see somebody. I was only 15. I was like, I want to see somebody else. And I was stunned that Sandy Baron really accomplished the role. He would have won a Tony if he'd been nominated. It's like, that's just the way that works. It's James Earl Jones in The Great White Hope. I mean, if Yaphet Kotto, who replaced him, had been the original, he would have won the Tony. It's just one of those parts that if you meet it, if you meet it more than halfway down the road, you win the race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I personally think Danny Burstein gave one of his very best performances in Gypsy. And I think he'd be the front runner in any other year. He's quite a beloved Broadway performer. But I think Jack Malone is gonna pull this off.
Yeah. It's sort of about the most talked about song and talked about performance this season. Cause people just love the number and love him. And he's doing all the right things. He's doing interviews and talking about the show. Yeah. And he's been, he's been with the show for like 6 years because
he won the Olivier
in London. He's always been the original Hester in the show. He's been with the show since they first developed it. He's always been part of this production. And he's the
outsider in the group too. You know, the four people nominated for best book, they're the other four members of the cast.
Yeah.
He's
the character. So I agree with you. I think it's Jack Malone's to lose. I mean, he's just phenomenal, and he plays so many other roles in the show too. It's amazing.
Yeah. Shout out to Taylor Trench, who does a superb job in Floyd Collins.
I was up there flying high in style right over Spain. But then I feel something, there's a thudding, and then suddenly, what? Hot dog! The plane is stalling. Jeez Louise, I think I'm falling. And that big old ocean's calling out. But I've got a bad feeling about this. I got a good feeling.
An American pilot.
I'm feeling good.
big splash.
And it's very loud.
I...
Charles, wait.
I've got a bad feeling.
Keep it together.
Our plan is going down the drain.
It's a bump in the road.
The Germans will be disbelieving.
Keep breathing.
When they hear two pilots crashed in neutral space.
Pilots crash all the time, it's fine.
Oh, I feel fine and dandy.
I think he needs a physician.
Missions hit the snags all the time.
It's a bad sign.
'Cause when your plane goes down and you can't see land, you'll soon be lying on the sand. So cut loose, you goose, and keep on feeling fine. Skibbidi-bidi-bidi-doo.
Charles! Please stop dry heaving.
This could sink the mission.
Well, this is war. Things never go quite to plan.
But Dad,
where the hell's our man?
Well, they're for London.
London receiving.
Skibbidi-bidi-bidi-bay.
Another pilot's washed up on the sand, and he's dead this time.
Yes, Charles!
The plan is working like I knew it would. Bills arrived, our efforts weren't in vain.
But they smell a rat.
What?
Two planes crash in the very same spot. The chopping bill opened to see what's what.
A coroner's coming, the top man here in Spain.
Oh,
God.
Oh,
Charlie, it's fine.
I got a good feeling.
An autopsy.
I'm feeling good, I'm good on this course.
Sure, Bill's skin has slowly been peeling.
Congealing.
But he'll be ruled a drowning Spilsbury swarm.
Do you trust that man?
Of course.
So what? The use in fretting.
Oh, God, I'm sweating.
There's no telling what another day will bring.
I need a drink, for there could be a hole in the boat. And who knows if you'll sink or you'll float.
Nice.
Thanks.
But
everything will work out.
And make sure they think he drowned!
Bye. Gene, can you get some work done, please?
Good night!
So, let's also talk about lead actor in a musical, which I think is a pretty tight race.
And we've there's got six nominees.
Six nominees.
And the way the Tonys work is if there's a tie in the fifth slot, then... both people get in. So it's the one category this year with six.
Yeah. So we've got Darren Criss in Maybe Happy Ending, Andrew Durand in Dead Outlaw, Tom Francis in Sunset Boulevard, Jonathan Groff in Just in Time, James Monroe Eagleheart for A Wonderful World, the Louis Armstrong musical, and Jeremy Jordan for Floyd Collins.
Thoughts? And may I say that they easily could have had seven because he's fresh in my mind because I saw him last night, but David Hyde Pierce is superb in Pirates of Penzance.
Yeah.
And he didn't even get nominated. So that just shows how competitive this category was.
Yeah.
I mean, look, these are all terrific performances. There's no getting around that. I think the front runners are Darren Criss and Maybe Happy Ending and Jonathan Groff and Just in Time. Mm-hmm. Tom Francis won the Olivier for Sunset Boulevard when it was done in London. I just don't see him leaping over the crowd here this time around. I don't know what his competition was for the Olivier, but this is tight. Jeremy Jordan is a beloved guy who's never won a Tony. Andrew Durand is doing almost the impossible in Dead Outlaw.
Yeah.
Your listeners may not know, but he's dead for half the play and motionless. But when he's on, he is on. I think Groff is giving one of the best musical theater performances I've ever seen. So he's got my vote, but this is a tough category. This is mm-hmm. tough because he did win last year. And so maybe people want to spread the wealth, but there's certainly plenty of precedent for actors winning Tonys 2 years in a row. It's happened at least six or seven times over the years, but Groff is there anybody that doesn't like Jonathan Groff as a person or as a performer? I mean, he's and boy, he, when it comes to campaigning for an award, you know, I mean, he's out there mm-hmm. and, but so is Darren Criss, who's quite lovable and adorable. And I think would have this sewn up if it really wasn't for Groff. Mm-hmm. And I think they're still going to battle it out to the finish line. I think Groff's going to come out victorious.
Okay. Yep. I think it's going to be Darren Criss, just because I think that he will be part of the Maybe Happy Ending list of wins. I just don't
think you're at. I think you're at a disadvantage for not having seen Groff. I think if you saw Groff, you'd understand that it's kind of a one of a kind performance. And
well,
speaking
of
replacements, I don't know if he can be replaced. I really don't know.
They think he can. The producers think he can. They have an understudy that they're totally gung-ho about, that they're fully prepared to put on if Jonathan is sick. They don't have any issue with that.
That's another story. I mean,
they just don't feel they have a situation where if he gets sick, they have to cancel performances. They feel they have an understudy who's perfectly fine. So, and Jonathan is only signed through a certain amount of time.
Right.
So they're
going to face it.
Because
it's a hit.
It's a big hit. But my only question, I have not seen just in time, but my only question is that the way the show is structured is that it's Jonathan Groff. Is that he's playing himself, and that's the way the show is set up, is that he's playing himself. He's not playing Bobby Darin. And he says that that's how the show is introduced, is that it's Jonathan Groff sort of paying tribute to Bobby Darin and telling the Bobby Darin story, but he's never telling you that he's playing Bobby Darin.
You kind of forget all that when he's playing Bobby Darin.
Right, I know, but that to me, that kind of means that he's not really, is he acting?
He sings, he dances,
he's singing, but is he acting, or is that just watching a concert?
People win for performances.
I know,
but
is he? But is he doing scene work? Is he doing acting? Is he?
Oh, of course he is.
Okay.
Of course he is.
Okay,
he has to play the emotions,
right?
I can't just sit back and go, I'm Jonathan Groff. I'm not Bobby Darin with a heart condition who's looking at
I'm just throwing that out there as, you know, when people look at stuff. Whereas Darren Criss is playing a robot who is not Darren Criss. He's playing an actual character who's, you know, with a fictional story, and you know, so it's, I think there's it's you know, it's apples and oranges when you're doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It always is. So
and
I think that in a lot of ways, you know, Darin has become the face of maybe Happy Ending, because he's also one of the producers, and the show is, he's really been the forefront of pushing the show a lot. So,
well, as I said, I think it's between the two of them.
I really do.
No question. We'll see what happens.
We will see.
Just in time, I found you. Just in time, before you came, my time was running low. I was lost, the losing dice were tossed, my bridges all were crossed, nowhere to go. Now you're here, now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I found my, 'cause love came just in time. You found me just in time and changed my lonely heart that lovely day. Now you're here, now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I found my, found me just in time and changed my lonely heart that lovely. Wasn't it lovely? Lonely heart that lovely day. So
then we're going to go lead actress in a musical. We've got Megan Hilty for Death Becomes Her, Audra McDonald for Gypsy, Jasmine Amy Rogers for Boop, Nicole Scherzinger for Sunset Boulevard, and Jennifer Simard for Death Becomes Her.
And again, let's not forget a category that easily could have stretched to six or seven.
Yeah.
Because the fact that Helen Chen did not get nominated when she and Darren Criss are it's a complete two-hander.
Yeah.
The parts are equal-sized, and she's wonderful in it. It really saddens me she couldn't squeak through. But this was a season where, you know, Robin Herder had no shot at getting in there. Natasha Hodgson in Operation Mincemeat. Mm-hmm. You left out Idina Menzel. I mean,
it was crowded.
This
was
a very, very crowded year. I think that this is an award in any other year where any of these five would be the winner in terms of however the competition laid out. Mm-hmm. They're all award-worthy performances. I don't think the women in Death Becomes Her really have the shot considering these other three nominees because Jasmine Amy Rogers has done what very few young actresses can do. It's really a Star Is Born moment. I mean, mm-hmm. she is, this is somebody to reckon with. She is as if and out of nowhere. And she is just sensational in the part. She's charming. She's sweet. She's funny. She can be dramatic. She's got a hell of a voice. And she dances like nobody's business. I mean, it's a, she's triple, quadruple, quintuple threat. And like I said, in any other year. But then you've got these two powerhouses. You've got Audra McDonald playing Rose and Gypsy and Nicole Scherzinger, you know, playing Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard. These roles win Tonys for people. It's been proven in the past. But there's controversy over both those performances and both those productions. Could Jasmine Amy Rogers just slip through the cracks while those two battle it out? What do you think?
I heard so many different variations of those theories when I was in New York. I mean, like I said, I did not hear a lot of positive responses to Nicole. A lot of the negative responses I heard were mostly placed on the direction. They didn't like the performance based on the way she was directed. So that was the turnoff for them. The general consensus was most of them felt that Audra was in the lead at this point, just because it's Audra. And they felt that despite some of the misgivings about the production, they didn't have as much misgivings about her performance. They felt that she was giving a really great performance as Rose.
It's a great take on the role. Her acting is, as always, we always think of Audra McDonald as this brilliant singer. It's easy to just forget what a great actress she is. You've seen her in straight plays, I mean, she's won two Tonys for straight plays.
Yeah.
And she's just, her take on Rose being from the South with this wonderful Southern lilt to everything. It's a beautifully realized performance. Mm-hmm. There are people who don't like the way her voice sounds in some of the songs. That's been controversial.
Well, there's a lot of people who don't like the way Tyne Daly's voice sounded in some of the songs.
That's true. That's true. Because it was written for Ethel Merman. It was written for Ethel Merman's voice.
Right.
And even Angela Lansbury had to transpose the numbers. But it's okay. It's okay for different women to tackle this role. It's one of the great roles in the canon.
Yeah.
I loved what she did with it.
But there were also people that I talked to who also told me what you also said, which was, don't discount Jasmine Amy Rogers. Don't, because sometimes the Tonys like to anoint a new star. And
we're only talking about 800 people, by the way. I think that's full Tony. So, you know,
it doesn't take a lot of voters to shift this around.
I know, but I don't know the scenario where Nicole gets 300, Audra gets 3. I mean, I don't know how it all works. I mean, that Jasmine somehow catapults them, because I really think it's sort of between those two, frankly, those two roles. The Boop, you know, Boop is Boop. It's not quite Norma Desmond, Mama Rose. These roles have heft. I think in the end, it is going to be Audra. I don't know if who wants to give her a seventh Tony has any play here.
I never heard that comment from anybody. Nobody, it's sort of like she has six.
Six.
Right. So seven doesn't matter. It's sort of like it wasn't even an issue for most people. We're like, what's one more?
Yeah, well, and this year with her 11th nomination, she is the most nominated actor, male or female, in Tony history.
Yeah,
she's so already achieved.
Like, right, people were like, one more Tony doesn't matter. That's not going to be an issue for most people.
She's got to move down to another shelf, though. It only fits six in her apartment. Right. She's got to move to the next shelf. That's her problem.
Right.
but I'm not going to be surprised if Nicole wins at all. She doesn't miss shows. Audra's missed a number of shows. She's really put herself out there as ready, willing, and able to take on another musical as soon as she can, and she should. Because she, I really have to tell you, she's captivating. She commands a stage. That voice, it's obscene. I mean, she really has got the goods. And for somebody who'd never been in a musical before, could easily see her winning it. Easily.
That rotten little Uncle Jocko. He's as cheap as your grandpa. Well, we're through with kiddie shows. This is time we moved on anyway. I'ma get us an agent to book the act on the Orpheum circuit.
Why do you fill him with such bunk?
It ain't bunk. If I die, it won't be from sitting. It'll be from fighting to get up and get out. Some people can get a thrill knitting sweaters and sitting still. That's okay for some people who don't know they're alive. Some people can thrive in a loom, living life in a living room. That's perfect for some people of 100 and above. But got a try. When I think of all the sights that I gotta see at, all the places I gotta play, all the things that I gotta be at, come on, Papa, what do you say? Some people cannot be content playing a bingo and paying rent. That's peachy for some people, for some humdrum people to be. But some people ain't me. I had a dream, a wonderful dream, Papa. All about June in the Orpheum circuit. Give me a chance and I know I can work it. I had a dream, just as real as can be, Papa. There I was in Mr. Orpheum's office, and he was saying to me, Rose, get yourself some new orchestrations, new routines and red velvet curtains. Get a feathered hat for the baby, autographs in front of a theater. Get an agent, and in jig time, you'll be being booked in the big time. Oh, what a dream, a wonderful dream, Papa. And all that I need is $88, Papa. That's what he said, Papa. Only $88.
You ain't getting 88 cents from me, Rose.
Then I'll get it someplace else. But I'll get it and get my kids out. Goodbye. I had to go to all the lodges I had to play, all the shriners I said hello to. Hey, I'm coming your way. Some people sit on their butts, not the tree, yeah, but not the guts. That's living for some people, for some humdrum people, I suppose. But they can sit and rot.
So let's move on to our final category.
Oh,
and to quote Haley Joel Osment from The Sixth Sense, I see dead people. we have a lot of musicals with a lot of death.
A lot of death.
We've got, so the
four
nominees,
out of five.
The nominees for Best Musical are Buena Vista Social Club, Dead Outlaw.
Death.
Dead Outlaw with a corpse on stage, half the musical. Death Becomes Her with two women.
Death in the
killing,
title.
Who are killing, who are two women who are killing each other throughout the entire show.
Yep, yep.
Maybe Happy Ending, which deals with sort of robot death.
Deals with mortality.
Deals with mortality. And Operation Mincemeat, which
About a dead body.
It's all about a dead body.
Exactly. So, I think this will play into Cynthia Erivo's comedic monologue if she does one.
Yes, there's a lot of dead bodies in this season.
Yeah.
So where are we? It feels like as we were heading into the nominations, people were like, "Oh, this is going to be a real horse race, and it's going to be like a three-way race between like three musicals." But it sort of doesn't seem to be playing out that way. I mean, I don't know. You think so?
I don't know. Well, look, we've already got Buena Vista Social Club winning choreography and supporting actress, conceivably. Mm-hmm. So suddenly the envelope being opened and it's Buena Vista Social Club, I wouldn't be surprised.
You know what? I don't see it, only because in some ways it's falls into the category of a jukebox musical. Because
it does.
And the Tonys, other than Jersey Boys, the Tonys have never given a jukebox musical a Best Musical Tony. Other than Jersey Boys.
No, it ain't Misbehaving.
Well, okay. It was a review. I don't necessarily consider that a jukebox musical, but some people do.
It had no new material, but
it's not that common to do that.
It's not.
Especially when you have original musicals to pick from.
But it sends the audience out on a cloud.
Yeah.
And it will tour
really well.
Absolutely.
It'll tour very well.
Better than Dead Outlaw, probably.
I just don't see it winning. I really don't. I just don't see Buena Vista Social Club winning.
I just wouldn't be surprised. It wouldn't, like, my jaw wouldn't hit the floor.
Everybody I talked to were pretty much convinced/resigned to the fact that it's going to be maybe Happy Ending.
Yeah, I think it is. Because
even the ones who were not totally in love with it were sort of like the industry Broadway sentiment sort of seems to be really behind the show.
Well, it's been the one since the night it opened.
Yeah.
It's been the one to beat.
Yeah. It's sort of like the little show that defied expectations.
Exactly. I mean, Dead Outlaw was coming in with some steam from how well received it was. It won the Outer Critics, the Drama Critics. It won a bunch of awards last season off Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
But it arrived on Broadway at the last show of the season. And there wasn't a lot of heat around it.
It's a really quirky happy ending show.
It is. And maybe Happy Ending has been the little engine that could. It's been chugging along.
Right.
And it opened early in the season, which sometimes is a detriment. Sometimes it makes no difference whatsoever. I don't think it makes a difference whatsoever here. I think maybe Happy Ending now, if we're looking back now, you know, could win a whole bunch of Tonys. And more than any other show, I think.
I mean, I think it's... I don't think Operation Mincemeat is very entertaining, but I just think it's in some ways a little too offbeat for the win.
It didn't capture people's mood.
I think there's a real big push for Death Becomes Her because it has been successful in New York. It's been running very successfully in New York, and it will tour really well because it's a known IP. Its intellectual property title is well known because it's sort of a cult hit movie. So it will tour really well. So a lot of the road presenters, they're kind of pushing it as, oh, well, this is going to be the big hit on the road. It's a big show, lots of costumes, and it's probably the biggest of the five nominees. Physical production wise.
And I feel confident in saying when the dust settles, if Death Becomes Her wins two Tony Awards, that's its maximum.
Yeah.
I think it will win costumes. It could win book if people want to go funny. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I don't think it's going to win anything else. So I'd be shocked if it won Best Musical. That would be a jaw dropper way more than Buena Vista Social Club.
Right. Maybe
again,
Happy Ending seems
it's the
to
one
be
I
the...
didn't care for.
Maybe Happy Ending seems to be sort of a consensus choice in the sense that it's the thing that I liked about the show is that it sort of sneaks up on you because
yes.
it's comes across as sort of a sweet, it's almost, and a lot of people have said this, it's almost like a Pixar movie on stage in the sense that it sort of comes across as this robot, sweet robot, romantic, not comedy, but sort of comedy. There are some very funny bits in it. But it ultimately, when it gets to the end, it has a very deep message about mortality and dealing with grief and loss and love. And there's a lot of heavy messages in the show when you get to the end of it. And it really sneaks up on you. It really does.
It's also the only love story among the five.
Yeah. And I think that's why people kind of love it. And it ultimately will, I think, have, and it's also a show that you can, it's not dependent on stars. It's a show that can easily be, people can easily be replaced in the show, and it can tour with it.
It'll tour in a very, very pared down production. It's like when Titanic toured, you know.
The sets are complex, but they're not that complex. I mean, they're not tilting the stage like they did in Titanic. But
yeah, but I don't know.
There's a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah, one little breakdown with your computer and you've got to stop the show.
Yeah, they've got a lot of moving pieces on stage. But
the other thing I'll say for maybe happy ending is that there's no one I've met who didn't like it. No one. I know people who didn't care for Dead Outlaw. I know people who don't care for, you know, all of the other nominees. I have a friend who really didn't like Buena Vista Social Club, just thought the book was terrible and couldn't get behind it.
I didn't love the book, and I thought the end of the show was a little abrupt. I mean,
it wraps up quicker than Grease.
Oh, I know. I was sort of like, wasn't sure where the show was going. I'm like, it's a really good story. And then I'm like, oh, we must be getting into overtime because, ending suddenly came down. It suddenly and they did they did that scene change at the end. It was like, oh, here we are, end of the story. Bye, everybody go home. It's like,
that's right.
Jeez, wow, that was fast.
Yeah.
It came out of nowhere.
I think the success story you'll read on June 9th in all the newspapers and online will be that maybe Happy Ending, you know, wins 5 or 6 Tony Awards, and that will be anointed as the big hit. And I think Oh Mary in the play category is going to win more awards than any other play.
Yeah.
And then there you have it. I could be wrong, but I've been predicting these things since 1967, and I do pretty well. Most years I do pretty well.
When you're in love, you are the loneliest. You're only half when one is what you were. You're part instead of whole when you're in love. You are the loneliest.
Sitting by your side as the day drifts by, seeing how you frown when you get impatient, helping you hold on to a moment that made you happy. Hoping that you'll think what I say is right, wanting you to laugh at my unintended charm.
When you're in love, you're never satisfied. The thing you want is always out of reach. A need without a name when you're in love. You're never satisfied.
Sitting by your side as the day drifts by, watching how you try when I'm done with trying, making little plans that I know will make you happy. Hoping when I tease that you'll put up a fight, wanting you to know all the funny things I am. When I'm sitting by your side,
seeing how you frown,
watching how you try,
hoping that you'll think what I say is right,
making little plans.
Sitting by your side as the day drifts by, now I'm
hoping that you feel all the things I feel, wishing that you want me to sit beside you, wanting now to learn all the things you are, waiting for a chance to invite you in.
your side on a sunny day.
When you're in love,
when you're in love,
you only have
the thing you want.
When you're in love,
when you're in love,
the thing you want.
You only have,
when you're in love, when you're in love.
Well, there you have it, from the mouth of Ron Fassler.
There you go.
And where can people find you online, Ron?
RonFassler.org is where you can read all of my blogs on theater and my column Theater Yesterday and Today, as well as purchase either of my books, Up in the Cheap Seats, about my life going to the theater as a little boy, and The Show Goes On, A History of Broadway Replacements.
So there you have it. Everybody tune in to the Tony Awards on June 8th. And see how we did in our predictions. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting night. One way or other, it's going to be a very interesting night.
I think Cynthia Erivo will open the show with some musical number that's going to knock us all on our butts. She is really something when you put her on stage and let her sing.
Yes.
And I have no insight into what's being done. I don't know what numbers are being done.
Shows are going to be on. Because I know that it's going to be interesting to see if they let any of the non-nominated best musicals.
Yeah, Smash would really love to be on the Tonys, no question about it.
They might let Jonathan do a number from Just in Time.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm sure Barry Weisler would love to get Real Women Have Curves up on stage. I mean, because he's keeping that show open.
Yep.
He's pumping money into that show and keeping it open and doing publicity like crazy on that show. Yep.
I hope so. Let's spread the wealth. You know, the Tonys are a 3-hour commercial for Broadway.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. You know,
I totally agree.
Let's have fun. Well, Donald, we'll check in with each other personally, if not on the air for everybody else,
yes,
and see how it all laid down.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
All right, then. Thank you.